Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Republican Congressman Pete King is calling it Senator Mitch McConnell's Marie Antoinette moment. The Senate Majority Leader last week said he thinks bankruptcy might be a better option for fiscally ailing cities and states. Better, according to McConnell, than hundreds of billions of dollars in federal aid. Local revenues are sharply down due to mass unemployment and the coronavirus-caused economic pause. So what happens if Congress doesn't approve federal aid to states? This hour on Point, COVID-19 and the impact on state and local budgets. And we will begin today in Washington with Kimberly Atkins. She's WBUR's senior news correspondent. Hi there, Kimberly.
Hi, Meghna.
You know, it's been a little while since you and I have talked, so I just want to first start by checking in. We're like in week 7 now, I think. I've lost count of this new world. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you for checking in. I am luckier than most.
Okay, good. Just wanted to just do that little quick nod to you there. So let's get straight to the news. First of all, let me play a little bit more of what Senator McConnell said on Wednesday of last week when he spoke to conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt.
I would certainly be in favor of allowing states to use the bankruptcy route. It saves some cities, and there's no good reason for it not to be available. My guess is their first choice would be for the federal government to borrow money from future generations to send it down to them now so they don't have to do that. That's not something I'm going to be in favor of.
That's the Senate Majority Leader last week. So, Kimberly, what prompted Mitch McConnell to say that he doesn't think that cities and states should receive a federal bailout?
Well, it seems the Senate Majority Leader is sort of trying to take a hard line somewhere as the Congress prepares to begin negotiating the next round of coronavirus-related relief. And, you know, what prompted it seems to be unclear because it has taken not only Democrats by surprise, but also a number of Republicans both in the Congress and also Republican governors by surprise. It seemed going into this, Meghna, that state and local funding was pretty much a given in what was going to be in the next package. In fact, Democrats had pushed for some local and state funding in that last interim package that passed last week. And so suddenly now to have this being something that is a potential bargaining roadblock seemed to really upend and put into question exactly how these negotiations are going to go.
So Senator McConnell was also pointing to what he says was sort of budgetary mismanagement by the states regarding pensions for state and local workers. And he didn't seem to want to, in his view, reward that mismanagement at this moment in U.S. history through, you know, a big package from Congress. He's been consistent on that before the era of COVID. But given the fact that it caught so many of his fellow Republicans off guard right now, I mean, did it seem to just come out of the blue? Or was he saying something like this, I don't know, a week or two ago with the previous aid packages?
Yes. Well, he has said before that he does not want anything, any part of the coronavirus related funding, emergency funding, to do with anything other than the coronavirus. We've heard him use that as a refrain when it came to calls from Democrats for things like shoring up election securities and making sure that there is access to the vote. Democrats said that's very much coronavirus related, and he disagreed. But in this sense, you have state and local officials who are saying very loud and clear, yes, we need this to respond to the coronavirus. But if we don't get this additional relief from the federal government, it will affect all state programs. It'll affect things like education and housing and health programs. And it'll affect police and first responders who are on the front lines of responding to this crisis, so that you can't separate them and that it is desperately needed.
Well, let's listen to some of the responses that did come forward from fellow Republicans, as you were saying. Here's Republican Governor Larry Hogan. He's governor of Maryland, and he joined Politico Playbook for a virtual interview last Thursday, so a remote interview. And here's what Governor Hogan had to say about what's happening in Maryland and what could happen if his and other states don't receive federal aid.
The governors have been pushing for a $500 billion package to assist the governors and the states to try to deal with this crisis. We've been on the front lines. We've taken the tough actions that were required of this, the actions that the federal government asked us to. And now we have to continue providing those services for the states. For my small state, for example, just until July 1, we're going to have a $2.8 billion shortfall. We have $1 billion rainy day fund, you know, stashed away, and we have a AAA bond rating, one of the few states to do, but we could be in a terrible financial situation.
That's Larry Hogan, governor of Maryland. We're going to talk in much more detail in a couple of minutes, Kimberly, about exactly what the state budgets go towards and how states have handled their budgets over the past several years. But I do want to ask you, look, Senator McConnell is the most powerful senator in the United States. He is the Senate Majority Leader. But is he isolated on this, or does he have support from other members of Congress?
He very well may be. We will see more clearly when they return next week. But even President Trump has expressed support for giving funding to state and local governments to respond to the coronavirus. President Trump himself is saying that it's up to the states. That's his stance about everything, including testing, which states have been calling for federal help and federal guidance to take over to get access to better testing and materials. He has put all that on the state. So for Mitch McConnell to turn around and say, well, yes, states, this is your baby, but we aren't going to give you any money for it, is really tough. And just Governor Hogan is co-sponsor of co-chair of the National Governors Association, and they're asking for $500 billion in direct aid that will allow them to make up for their shortfalls that are found for this. So it's going to be a big fight if Mitch McConnell digs in.
And how is that fight going to happen if the halls of Congress are empty?
Well, they won't be empty next week. The Congress was scheduled to come back on May 4th. As of right now, and things can often change, and we've seen that, they are still planning to come back. In a conference call today, McConnell told members that they plan to come back on Monday. There's no clear sign about how long they may be here and how long they may be in session. But the focus will be that next round of relief, which, you know, states are saying they needed yesterday. So it's going to be really tough to see how much longer they can put that off.
Mm. Well, you know, I mentioned Republican Congressman Pete King at the top of this show, and I just wanted to say in more detail what he actually tweeted last week in response to what Senator McConnell said. Congressman King tweeted, "McConnell's dismissive remark that states devastated by coronavirus should go bankrupt rather than get the federal assistance they need and deserve is shameful and indefensible." And then the congressman went on to say, "To say that it is free money to provide funds for cops, firefighters, and healthcare workers makes McConnell the Marie Antoinette of the Senate." So it sounds as if the Senate Majority Leader is getting quite a bit of criticism here, but he's also, as we mentioned, a canny and powerful politician who has total control of the Senate, more or less. So, Kimberly, though, there is a second level of analysis that we should get to here beyond the politics, and that is, can states even declare bankruptcy, unlike cities?
Yes, that's a big question mark. I mean, currently there is no legal mechanism for a state to declare bankruptcy, as we've seen some cities do. Congress could pass a law to enable states to be able to do that. It would require Congress to act, which, you know, in itself is a tall order. But there's also questions about whether that is even constitutional, whether Congress has that power to allow states to declare bankruptcy. And another problem for states is, unlike the federal government, most states have laws that require them to balance their budgets. So there's no extra money to be found. There's no borrowing against the future. When they run out of money, they run out of money, and that's it. And it can lead them in very dire straits. Whereas, you know, the federal government, obviously, all of this relief money is coming, is being borrowed. Essentially, it's raising the national debt level. But the states don't have that balance to run up. So it's really questionable whether this is even a possibility, which shows that this might just be a lever that Mitch McConnell is trying to pull as these negotiations are set to begin, to say he wants to draw a line in the sand and he's going to be very careful about what aid states and local municipalities get.
Mm, and of course, he'll be having to negotiate with Democrats, both in the House and the Senate. Here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer responding to Senator McConnell's comments. Senator Schumer was on NPR's Morning Edition on Friday.
First of all, what McConnell said was so far out of the mainstream, I think he's going to have to walk it back. Mm-hmm. He is isolated. Republican senators, Republican governors have denounced him. And, you know, he was the reason that state and local aid was blocked in the interim bill that the president's signing today. He wouldn't let it go forward. But now that people have seen how twisted his logic or illogic is, I think actually what he said has given even more momentum for state and local assistance in number four.
Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer on NPR's Morning Edition on Friday. Kimberly, we've talked about some of the response coming from McConnell's fellow Republicans. How have Democrats been responding to this?
Well, Democrats have largely panned this, pretty uniformly panned this, and especially coming out of states like New York, where Senator Schumer and Congressman King are from, Governor Cuomo made very clear that was a non-starter, that I think he called the suggestion dumb from Mitch McConnell. And he also pointed out that by and large, larger states like New York have been paying a significant amount into the federal government in the form of taxes, whereas smaller states like Kentucky, where Mitch McConnell is from, have been more on the receiving end. So he saw it as a bit of hypocrisy coming from the Senate Majority Leader as well.
Well, we are talking about the impact that COVID-19 is having on state and local budgets and the fight going on in Washington over whether Congress should offer hundreds of billions of dollars in aid to states. We have a lot more to talk about when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking this hour over the political battle going on over whether Congress should appropriate hundreds of billions of dollars of aid to state and local governments, because those state and local governments are suffering a fiscal crisis due to the coronavirus pandemic. And we want to know what you think. Do you think this is a time for federal aid to come to your state, to your city, and your town? Do you know what state budgets are usually used for? Or is this a moment to actually ask for some kind of pension reform in exchange for that federal aid? I'm joined today by Kimberly Atkins. She is WBUR senior news correspondent with us from Washington, D.C. Let's listen to a little bit more of some of the reaction that has been coming from governors regarding Senator Mitch McConnell's statement that maybe states ought to go bankrupt. Here's New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, Democrat, of course, responding to Senator McConnell's comments on Thursday, and Governor Cuomo called it incredibly short-sighted.
How do you not fund police and fire and teachers and schools in the midst of this crisis? Yes, airlines are important. Yes, small business is important. So are police and fire and healthcare workers, who are the frontline workers. And when you don't fund the state, then the state can't fund those services. Makes no sense to me.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Here is Governor Mike DeWine of Ohio, Republican. Now, he didn't directly refer to Senator McConnell specifically during his coronavirus press briefing last Thursday, but Governor DeWine was asked about the state's backup reserves.
You know that we have asked departments to take a look and make some very significant cuts. We're going to be announcing those in the next several days. So it's coming. It's not quite ready, but we have to do that. We have no choice. The rainy day fund. It is raining, but it's probably going to, as John said, it's probably unfortunately going to continue to rain for a while.
That's Governor Mike DeWine of Ohio. Let's go to our callers. Let's go to Mark, who is calling from Appleton, Wisconsin. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. A few things. One, to hear Mitch McConnell concern about future generations after he steered the massive tax cut for billionaires and millionaires is just ludicrous. I live in Wisconsin, as you said, and in our state, our pension is completely healthy. It's well-funded. We don't have a deficit. Nonetheless, we are going to be in a world of hurt. The universities are already furloughing people because of the lack of funds, because we've lost so much revenue. And so, this idea that it's about, this should be for about pension reform. I mean, the idea of dividing the country this way is really just so low. I would have thought that Mitch McConnell couldn't go any lower, but he really has reached a new low with this of trying to divide and say it's a blue state problem. I live in at best, a purple state, and we are having a lot of problems. We're going to have a lot of issues with this. And this has nothing to do with our pension.
Mark, thank you so much for that call. Let's go to Barbara, who's calling from Memphis, Tennessee. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hello. I currently receive a state pension. I haven't contacted my union in 30 years. Got a letter from them around Christmas saying they're after our pensions. And so I've been watching. And I become aware that pension funds are like any other government rainy day fund nowadays. Let's go get it. Let's go get it. Let's go get it. And it doesn't matter if it's at the expense of a group of people like me who earn this. In fact, I paid into mine a considerable amount to have the one that I have. And this is just another place where instead of taking responsibility for what's going on in our country and having tax rates that are commensurate with that responsibility, we're just taking from people who really can't afford to give up what we're taking. We're increasing the poverty level in our country in a very cynical way.
Yeah. And that's, Barbara, I want to say thank you so much for that call, because on the the question you raise about do tax rates sort of reflect what's actually needed in this country, I now want to introduce into the conversation Michael Leachman. He joins us from Silver Spring, Maryland. He's Senior Director of State Fiscal Research at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities and co-author of a recent report headlined, States Need Significantly More Fiscal Relief to Slow the Emerging Deep Recession. And we have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Magna.
So first of all, I wonder if we could actually just take a step back and sort of set the table here on a common understanding about what state budgets actually do go to paying for right now. So in normal times, what are those billions of dollars going to pay for in each of America's 50 states?
Well, states do two primary things. They provide for an education system, and they provide health care for people who can't afford it. They do a number of other important things for public safety and transportation and environmental protection and that sort of thing. But by far, the two biggest things are education and health care.
Education and healthcare. So then this focus that we've seen on pensions for state and local workers, how much of a state's annual budget does that take up?
Well, state spending to keep up with their pension payments only accounts for 4.7% of state general fund spending each year. Pension systems are long-term obligations. You know, those are retirement benefits that states will need to pay in the future. So it's held in a separate trust fund. What we're talking about when we talk about state fiscal relief is aid going to states to do the main things that they do, which again are education and healthcare and some other important things.
Mm-hmm. And yet, in fairness, we have seen at the local level, perhaps at the city level, over the past several years, lots of evidence that there are basically unfunded pension costs that governments have agreed to that are causing some kind of burden on those budgets. Is that not true?
Well, there's a small number of cases where states and cities have serious long-term problems with their pension funding. So that's a real issue. But let's be clear about how this is a distraction from the crisis of the moment. And states face declining revenues because of the pandemic, which they could not have predicted, the extraordinary and very, very worrisome and drastic decline in their revenues, and the increase in cost that brings. And the combination of those two things is what has created the fiscal crisis, which is putting the jobs of teachers and healthcare workers and police officers on the line unless the federal government steps up.
Right. And it's important, very important, I think, to underscore what you just said, Michael, because, I mean, this is an historic moment. Economies have paused, right? And I'm not quite sure anyone could have foreseen the kind of slow / stoppage that we're having here. At the same time, there are rainy day funds. For example, we heard that piece of tape from Ohio Governor Mike DeWine talking about there's the rainy day fund and it is raining. It's going to continue raining for a long time. How well funded are those rainy day funds in the states?
Yeah, states have done a pretty good job of saving for this recession. Compared to heading into the last recession, states are significantly better prepared with their reserves and their similarly, their unemployment insurance trust funds are also better prepared on average. 38 states are better prepared than they were going into the Great Recession, and most states meet the standard that the Department of Labor sets for recession preparation. So, the problem is that, as you said, the economy has fallen apart so rapidly and so deeply that the shortfalls, that the ability that for states to be able to pay for healthcare and education services and keep those workers employed is really strained because and far beyond what they what's ever happened in decades and much more than they have in their reserves, even though they've been you know, pretty well prepared.
Mm. So do the reserves, even in their totality, come anywhere near to the amount that states are going to need for, say, the next two fiscal years?
No, they really don't. States have about $75 billion in their reserves. Again, that's pretty much and pretty good compared to where they've been going into past recessions. But $75 billion compared to what we're projecting to be about $500 billion in shortfalls for states alone, not counting localities. You can see that the scope of the problem is much bigger than the reserves that states have built up.
I mean, in fact, in your report, you project $500 billion in state shortfalls over the next two fiscal years.
Yes, that's right. $500 billion.
You know, short by $500 billion. Yeah.
Exactly. That's much worse than heading into the last recession was called the Great Recession, and at the time it was record breaking in terms of the shortfalls that states faced. But this downturn projects to be much worse. I mean, unemployment's projected by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, which serves both houses with both parties in Congress, to hit 16%. Later this year. It only hit 10% during the Great Recession, and that funnels through to states' abilities to pay for education and healthcare.
Kimberly, you've been listening patiently here, wondering if you wanted to jump in with some thoughts on what Michael is saying.
Yes. I mean, in this, I think it's important to remember that in this discussion about state and local funding and what states and localities are doing and potential for mismanagement for things like pension funds, that's a reality that has happened separate and apart from the coronavirus response and how that's hurt their budgets. Where states and localities go is where the economy goes. And if states are plunged into these dire financial circumstances, that will lead to a faster and more prolonged recession and perhaps even depression. Those things are not just governed by the private market. And that's an important part of the discussion that I think sometimes gets missed.
Yeah. So Michael, talk about that, because that's a really important point. They are mirrors of the economy, because they are the economy. And to, you know, as you point out in your report, look, state and sales and income taxes account for what, 70% of state tax revenue, 70%. So, I mean, if we see a plunge in that, it's a complete mirror on the state of the economy.
Yes, that's exactly right. If states don't get significant federal aid, and soon they're going to be forced in the next few weeks to sharply cut back the healthcare and other services that people really need right now and lay off workers, people like nurses and police officers and teachers, and those layoffs and other cuts will make the recession worse and could weaken our ability to fight the virus. I mean, that, as Kim said, the economy is already hurting badly right now. The last thing we need is another round of layoffs of teachers and first responders and healthcare workers.
Yeah. So let's loop back to something else that Kimberly said a little earlier, and that is there is right now no legal mechanism for states, not municipalities, but for states to declare bankruptcy. Now, if I remember correctly, after 2008, sometime 2009, 2010, there was a moment where I think Congress considered changing the rules around that, but decided that it would actually be too dangerous, too costly to allow states to declare bankruptcy. Is that right, Michael?
Yeah, there was some consideration of it, although it was rejected pretty quickly across the political spectrum and has been for many years. The ban on bankruptcy holds down the cost to states and hence to taxpayers of really important public infrastructure projects like roads and transit systems and railroads and new schools. And those investments are relatively inexpensive because states use low interest bonds that investors will buy, even though the return is low, because they're confident that states will pay them back. If states could go bankrupt, then investors would just demand higher interest rates, and that would make the infrastructure investments, which are so crucial to our economy, more expensive to states, and that would push up taxes or make those investments less likely.
Right. I mean, I just think this is such an important point that to fund things like infrastructure, because states are guaranteed to have to pay back the loans they take, essentially, investors are much more willing to provide that money at low interest rates. So, I mean, there's a system here that could break down if those, you know, those high bond ratings that some of the states enjoy are allowed to drop, right, essentially is what you're saying. The cost of borrowing could go way up, making everything a lot more expensive, which in the worst case scenario would just prolong the problems here. So I'm not hearing you say, Michael, that you think that allowing states to declare bankruptcy is any kind of solution here.
No, it's a terrible idea. And as I said, across the political spectrum, this idea has been rejected for many years.
And so then what would you recommend Congress do?
Well, Congress needs to provide substantial state fiscal relief, and as soon as possible, before states start cutting, laying off teachers and police officers and healthcare workers, and before they start scaling back on the healthcare services and other services that they provide. As I said, this is the worst time for us to be thinking about doing that. The economy is already badly hurting. We can talk, if you like, about some specific mechanisms that we'd recommend for the federal government to provide that fiscal relief through.
Yeah, and we will when we come back from the other side of the break here, because we just have a minute left to go. But Kimberly, take us back to Washington here for a moment. I mean, what's your sense as to how this could go in Congress?
Yeah, I think that this was the Senate majority leader basically drawing a line in the sand and sort of signaling to Democrats that huge requests for state and local funding are not just going to get pushed through with a rubber stamp, that he is going to scrutinize them and try to push it down as much as possible. I'm sure we will see Democrats push back and say, look, Mitch McConnell was not concerned about the national debt when it came to giving bailouts to airlines and other private industry, and to tell states and localities that they don't get the same sort of benefit is just a very bad look, not just for our first responders, but also just politically for Republicans.
Well, Kimberly Atkins, WBUR senior news correspondent, stand by there in Washington, and Michael Leachman, hang on as well. We've got a lot more to talk about this question of if and how much the federal government should provide emergency aid to state and local governments. We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking this hour about state and local governments and their budgets, which are taking a major hit because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And I'm joined today by Kimberly Atkins. She's WBUR senior news correspondent with us from Washington, D.C. And Michael Leachman also joins us. He's senior director of state fiscal research at the Center on Budget and Policy priorities. And let's just listen to a moment to what the president himself had to say about this issue during the White House coronavirus press briefing last Thursday. President Trump said this.
If we can help states, we're always going to help states. Now, there's different ways of helping states. Some ways are better than others. So we're looking. It is interesting that the states that are in trouble do happen to be blue. It is interesting. You know, if you look around, I mean, the states that seem to have the problem happen to be Democrat.
That's President Trump on Thursday. Michael, just quickly fact check that. Is it mostly, quote unquote, Democratic states that are having the problems right now? It doesn't seem to me that the virus actually cares what party exactly. is in various state houses.
No, that's right. The virus is in every state, and the economic effects of that result from the virus and our efforts to fight it are hitting every state. And we're already hearing from governors in both Republican-controlled and Democratically-controlled states that this is such a serious crisis. Kimberly mentioned the National Governors Association, bipartisan organization of the nation's governors, called for $500 billion in additional relief, as well as an expansion of the Medicaid payments that the federal government provides. So, this is cuts across. It's an issue in every state. In fact, some of the biggest shortfalls are in states that have also been hit by declining oil prices. So states like Alaska, Oklahoma, Louisiana.
Mm. Well, on the other hand, though, congressional Democrats have had to answer for why there wasn't more aid for state and local governments in the latest relief bill. Here is House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on Sunday on CNN's State of the Union, and Jake Tapper pressed her on this issue.
State and local have done their jobs magnificently. They should be impatient. Their impatience will help us get right. An even bigger number. And that goes for Republican governors, too. Governor Hogan of Maryland has been spectacular in all of this. So it's many governors, right. Many mayors, bipartisan, for us to get the largest amount. I'm sorry that we had to have an intervention because we were going from CARES 1 to CARES 2. The intervention came. We made right. The most of it.
That's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on CNN yesterday. Let's go to Paul, who's calling from Attleboro, Massachusetts. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Go ahead.
So I'm the mayor of Attleboro, and this is a concern. I've been speaking with the city auditor and accountant about this, the loss of revenues, as well as the city treasurer. It's concerning for us because without the revenues, we are going to have a hard time paying the employees that are working in city government. Employees are all providing a service for the citizens. I think what we're going to do this year is tap our stabilization fund, which is about $4.5 million. And our budget is about $140 million just to avoid layoffs. But if we have to do that use too much of that, that could then hurt our credit rating, which then would make projects more expensive. So the support from the state or federal government, particularly the federal government especially, in terms of helping out with municipalities' loss of revenues is going to be important. Meals tax, hotel tax, building permits that help pay for, that's a source of income as well. All these things go into paying for services for citizens, and the cities and states really don't have the ability to print money.
Right.
Like the federal government. So I'm really hopeful.
And this is Mayor Paul Hero, right? Or Hero? Did I say that right,
yeah.
Paul? Okay, of Attleboro, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
No, like practically speaking, on the ground in Attleboro, I mean, as I had asked Michael earlier, specifically, what is this money going to pay for? I imagine a giant chunk of it is Attleboro schools.
Well, we're in the process of doing our budget right now. If the state continues to give us what they initially pledged with the House 1 budget back in January. That's the governor's budget. Our schools should be okay this upcoming fiscal year, FY21. However, if local receipts from the state fall, that's when we're going to have to tap our stabilization fund or face layoffs. And again, if we are looking at layoffs, city services are already stretched thin. Mm-hmm. It's just going to hurt the services that are being provided to citizens. That's a big concern.
Right. Well, Mayor Paul Hero of Attleboro, Massachusetts, thank you so much for calling us.
Thanks for taking the call.
Now, Michael, you said you had some mechanisms that that Congress could apply to get the money to states. I just wonder if you could just briefly talk about that, because I also do want to talk with you about what states themselves could do to raise revenue. But did you want to walk us through one or two of your ideas for Congress?
Yeah. So the quickest, most effective way to provide relief is by increasing the federal share of Medicaid. The payments that the federal government provides for Medicaid. Medicaid is shared by the states and the federal government. So when the federal government increases its share, it's direct savings for states. So that's the best way to do it. We also really think that the aid should be provided in such a way that it goes out based on economic conditions in each state, and that it's set up to so that it stays on as long as it's needed. If the economy comes roaring back, then it'll shut off. If it's needed for a longer period than we hope, then there will be additional aid that states can use to avoid layoffs and other cuts.
Mm. So let's talk about states themselves and if there's solutions within their own borders. Because prior to this terrible pandemic, one could make the argument that there are untapped resources in states themselves, right? I'll just use where I'm sitting as an example. State of Massachusetts has a 5% flat income tax. Regardless of how much you earn in Massachusetts, it's 5%. And there have been a couple of attempts to put some kind of progressive tax structure in place in supposedly true blue Massachusetts, and all of those have been swatted down. So, I mean, is there something to the fact that states aren't actually looking across what they could do effectively to raise more revenue?
Yeah, I think this is a really important issue then, and will need to be part of the state solution. You know, in nearly every state, 9 out of 10 states, the state and local tax system is upside down. It asks more as a share of income from those who have the least, and the least from those who have the most. So, you know, there is room for sure to reverse course there. And there are a number of ways to do that. You mentioned one. In states like Massachusetts, with a flat income tax, have a graduated income tax that's based on ability to pay. There are a number of economic development subsidies that states are using that I think are not priorities, and in some cases are not really working the way that they were intended. So, you know, we take a good hard look at those and address the crisis in a way that both responds to the immediate crisis and also sets ourselves up for a better future that helps address kind of underlying structural inequities.
But Michael, are you concerned that we might see a replay of what happened after the last Great Recession, or even in previous times of sort of fiscal pain? And that is, states and especially local governments use the tools that are quickest to hand. I mean, they raise fees, for example, rather than really getting at those structural inequities.
Yes, this is something that we are very worried about. As you said, after the Great Recession, states and localities, because they were so cash-strapped, they shifted more to fees and fines. So in the criminal legal system, the results are egregious and worsen the structural inequities that are already in place in the country. You know, what ends up happening is that people end up getting thrown in jail simply because they can't pay a fee.
And so do you fear that happening again? Because there's no doubt,
exactly.
There's no doubt that cities and towns are going to be faced with, we just heard from a mayor, if not this year, in FY22, that's when the rubber will really hit the road for them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, these are the kinds of very serious human implications of the federal government. If the federal government fails to provide substantial fiscal relief to states and localities, these are the sort of damaging effects that could happen.
Hmm. Well, Kimberly, we've got about a minute left to go here. Just your final thoughts on the federal government's role here, what might happen given the fact that Senator McConnell has raised very loud and perhaps influential objections to federal money going to the states?
Yeah, I think because of the vocal views of governors from across the country, in particular the co-chairs of the National Governors Association, Governor Hogan of Maryland and Governor Cuomo of New York, bipartisan calls for aids and explaining exactly what will happen if this aid isn't given, I think it'll be really hard for Mitch McConnell to hold the line that he's holding. It's certainly going to be at the center of the debate. But keep in mind, this is just one point that lawmakers are going to have to debate in this next round of funding. There are calls for everything from election reforms to bolstering protections for prisoners. It's just going to be so broad that it's very difficult to see. It took 2 weeks just to refund the small business fund for those loans that are popular and that have support from both sides of Congress. If that took 2 weeks, how long is it going to take to negotiate this next round? And if even state and local funding is not something that's agreed upon, it just says that we are in for a long haul, and it's no telling if this money will come even before these states start to run out of money. It's going to be really tough, and time is short.
Right. And as you've said multiple times, Kimberly, throughout this hour, states have no choice. They have to balance their budgets by law. So something is going to happen. Something's going to have to give. Kimberly Atkins, WBUR senior news correspondent with us as always from the nation's capital. Kimberly, thank you so very much.
Always a pleasure.
And Michael Leachman, senior director of state fiscal research at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities and co-author of a recent report titled States Need Significantly More Fiscal Relief to Slow the Emerging Deep Recession. Michael, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Megna.
And by the way, we have a link to Michael Leachman's report at onpointradio.org. Now, for the last several minutes of the program today, of this hour today, I want to turn to Jack Beatty. He's On Point News Analyst, and he joins us from Hanover, New Hampshire. Hello there, Jack.
Hello, Megna.
So reflect on what you just heard here about the dire fiscal condition that states and local governments are very likely to find themselves in quite soon.
Yes, they are in a dire fiscal situation. President Trump is in a dire political situation, and that's what I want to focus on. His reelection depends on restarting the economy fast, soon, now. Blue states are a large part of the economy. Of the 15 most prosperous states, 11 are led by governors. How do you get blue state governors to open up an economy that, if it returns, and it will benefit the president? Well, he's trying various measures. He's promoting demonstrations against the governors, right? Those are named to open up the economy, people, the protesters, and so on. But there's another thing that he's doing, and that is trying to starve the beast. His Axios saying, the thinking among some Republican officials, Trump officials, is that many states should be reopening their government soon and that additional funding could deter them from doing so. Politico says, if Congress keeps, quoting sources, if Congress keeps cutting checks for state and local governments, they will be disincentivized to open up their economies. So denying state aid is, or at least holding out that prospect, is a way of getting the states to act faster, to open up the economies faster. And the president's reelection depends on that. And so I think this talk about, you know, well, we don't know we're going to do state aid, the scramble that he's forced the states to do to get equipment, no national purchasing, the stalling on testing and the passing of the buck to the, it's all about coercing them and getting them to open up their economies. They take the onus, of course, because if people begin to die, it's the governors. And if the economy recovers, it's the president who gets the credit. You know, you got a nice little state there, the president is saying. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. And we know that extortion, pressure, leverage, he likes the word leverage, is his, you know, that's his dominant way of dealing with the world. And I think that's what all this comes down to, the president's dire political straits.
Well, perhaps, yet I keep coming back to Senator McConnell, Jack, honestly, because he's the one who's been most clear in saying, well, he would actually stop Congress from providing any funding to states, as we've talked about through this hour. I mean, perhaps there's just a sense of political cooperation there between him and the president. But what does Mitch McConnell get out of all of this?
Well, he gets, first of all, it is doing the president's bidding, and he manages to wrap it up in this scheme that has been a part of states declaring bankruptcy, that's been a part of Republican politics for some time. That was part of the Tea Party movement. Newt Gingrich ran for president in 2012, saying the state should be declared bankruptcy. And the idea there is, no, it's good. We're going to honor that if the states go bankrupt, they pay the bondholders, they hurt the pensioners. And that fits the Republican playbook of be good to the rich and create resentment among everybody else.
Jack Beatty, On Point News analyst. Jack, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Well, tomorrow we are going to be talking about the economy again, this time we're circling back to that massive amount of unemployment that has hit American workers. We want to know what the COVID-19 economy has done to reshape your life and what would you do to reboot the economy for America 2.0. Call us and leave us a voicemail at 617-353-0683, 617-353-0683. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive Save the Planet is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.